Out here, if you're doing nothing, you're doing everything right. Though on a cruise with Norwegian, even if you're doing nothing, you're still basking in the warm sun, enjoying the peaceful ocean waves, you're breathing. Don't forget about breathing. Definitely need to be breathing. So you get to do nothing or everything, but you still need to be breathing. It's like really important.
Experience the difference with cruises to Alaska, the Caribbean, and Europe. Norwegian Cruise Line. It's different out here. Visit NCL.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Norwegian Cruise Line ships registry with Bahamas and USA.
Hey, welcome back everyone to the channel. Tonight we have part three of this horrifying story. If you haven't been following along, please do not watch this video. Backtrack to the first episode and then come back and see me because it is going down. It is horrifying and I don't think I'm going to bed anytime soon. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. I awoke after a few hours to find Max and Naomi standing over me. The air felt chilly. I looked around quickly and saw we were still in the back room of the visitor center. The door propped open to allow a view of the front sliding glass door. Nothing seemed amiss, though someone had certainly cleaned up. The floor even looked swept and mopped. "What time is it?" I asked in a gruff voice.
7 a.m.,
Max answered. I looked out the glass door in front in surprise. "Then why is it pitch black out?" They looked at each other and shrugged. I got up, my back cracking. I felt wiped out and sore. I felt cold and uncomfortable. Most of all, I wanted to go back home and be done with this whole ordeal. My curiosity had been sated forever.
"All right, let's do what we're gonna do," Naomi said, motioning with her hand towards my little Toyota.
We still have nearly a full tank, thank God. I am not feeling in the mood to walk 70.9 miles or more. We cramped into the car, Naomi driving, me in the passenger seat and Max in the back. We all had our guns out, but for a while the road was clear. I felt watched, but saw nothing except the occasional glittering of eyes from the forest. A few times a fox or a few deer would run out in front of the car and Naomi would slam on the brakes and let them pass. Still, the sun did not rise. Because the dirt road had so many potholes and branches on it, the going was relatively slow. After a couple of hours of traveling at 15 or 20 miles an hour, we pulled over for some food. There was a small dirt turnaround on the side that we slid into before turning off the headlights and engine. Far off behind us, we heard more of those screams from the monstrosities we had first encountered, which were soon answered by a chorus of others scattered in all different directions. Max passed out peanut butter crackers and bottled sweet tea from the supplies in the back seat, and for a while, we all ate in silence.
"How far have you gone up this road, Max?" Naomi asked.
Her sudden words caused me to jump in the dark and slightly tighten my finger around the trigger. Thankfully, the safety was on, and there was no risk of blowing out the windshield or shooting through the engine.
"I've gone up a little farther than this," he said quietly. "There should be a few cabins coming up on the left, all painted a dark red. This trip with you two has been much easier than the ones I had made on my own, knock on wood. Maybe there is power in numbers after all."
After we finished eating, we continued driving slowly on. Sure enough, after another 20 minutes or so, the headlights illuminated a dark red cabin on the left, the screen door left open and flapping in the light wind. Farther off in the woods behind it, we saw another cabin with the windows smashed out, a dead generator behind it. Another 50 feet ahead, we saw the final one of the lot, a cabin that had been burned down and only left behind the blackened skeleton of itself.
"That wasn't like that before,"
he said, pointing to the burned-out shell of a cabin. I shook my head.
"Doesn't matter. We aren't staying here anyways," I said.
But Naomi stopped the car and flipped off the headlights.
"What about those generators?" she asked.
"What about them?" I said. They could have gasoline, she said.
Or they could have propane, Max said. How much do you even know about generators? I don't think most run on gas.
We need the look just in case, Naomi said. If they have gas, or if there is gas containers anywhere around here, then we need to grab every drop. We don't know how long our current supply will last.
I sighed, turned the safety off of my gun, and motioned for her to get out. We all left the car at the same time, our guns at the ready. The breeze felt warm, as if the further we went down the road, the more we left behind our cold New England climate. Behind the cabins, we heard chanting, perfectly in unison. As soon as I heard them, a hot breeze began to blow, making my eyes water. It drove away the chill in my bones instantly, and within a few seconds I started to sweat, my heart racing as the chanting grew faster. I looked from Max to Naomi and saw they felt it too. Their eyes widened and sweat began to pop out of their foreheads and cheeks.
You got your game face on?
I asked Max, the most experienced shooter among us. He nodded.
Turn your safeties off if they're on, and be ready to shoot for center mass, he said.
He motioned for us to hide behind the nearest cabin. That is all the time that we had before we saw a line of people come from behind the burnt cabin. At first I thought we were seeing Buddhist monks. They had the same shaved head and downcast eyes. They all wore identical robes, but instead of the orange hue of Buddhism, the robes were jet black. The language they chanted sounded like Sanskrit. A dozen of them huddled in front of the burnt cabin, with a 13th bringing a naked woman. She was bound, blindfolded, and gagged, with signs of torture all over her body. Someone had carved occult symbols into her belly and legs, and drops of blood still pooled and fell beneath her as she was put to the deer hide stretcher and then dragged behind him. They laid her in the center of the circle, and they all moved their sandaled feet closer to her until they stood mere inches away. The chanting grew louder, and her eyes grew wider. Then they moved back rapidly, moving their heads back and forward in a rhythmic motion in the direction of the burning cabin. The chanting quieted as a horrific being rose out of the ruins of the fire. It looked as if he took pieces of himself from the ruins. His skin was the texture of charred wood. His joints had...
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Rusty nails, and he screeched an inhumanly loud cry as he ripped away from the burnt-out cabin. The remains of the cabin all immediately fell into a heap. The creature's eyes looked like orbs of burning red fire as he stood 10 feet tall, looking down at all the quiet faces of the downcast monks before his attention focused on the naked woman. At that moment, I felt a gentle tap on my arm. It was Naomi. She leaned close to my ear and whispered,
"Screw looking for the fuel. We need to get out of here now."
She pointed to the car. Luckily, the cabins and trees had obscured the view of the car from the monks, but we couldn't count on that continuing indefinitely.
"Wait a few seconds," I said. "I think we need to see this."
The creature knelt down to the bound woman. I could see her widening eyes and her thrashing, but they had bound her too tight. It opened its mouth wide, a cavernous abyss, and began to scream mere inches from her face. The torrent of echo noises made me clasp my ears in pain, but I continued to watch in terror as the wall of sound began to rip at the woman's skin. It tore off her gag and bindings, then her hair and eyes followed. But as her healthy pink skin tore away, it was replaced by the marble white paleness of the monstrosities we had encountered first. New cataract-stricken milky eyes emerged from the ruins of her former human eyes.
Simultaneously, her mouth ripped from ear to ear in a terrifying smile. Hundreds of crooked teeth seemed to grow from her gums as she gnarled at her tongue, finally chewing it off and spitting it on the ground in a bloody heap. In this entire transformation, the black-clawed monks never moved but simply stared impassive. Rising from her spot on the ground, she began walking on all fours, crab-walking backwards. Her joints cracked and her tendons creaked as her black hair dragged on the leaves behind her. Then she scurried off into the woods, towards the direction we had come.
"Another guard for the sacred forest,"
the tallest monk said, stepping forward. His bronze skin reflected the moonlight as he stared up at the creature.
"Jason," Max whispered in my ear, "we need to go right now."
I nodded, and we began to slightly slink back into the car, keeping the cabins between us and the monks as much as possible. None raised the alarm as we reached the car and very gently closed the doors, trying to avoid slamming them. Naomi started the engine. I held my breath, praying that no one would hear the doors close or the engine start. My prayers apparently failed, because a few moments later, the red-eyed monster came sprinting out from between the three cabins, looking frantically around before seeing our car and galloping towards us. Naomi hit the gas, and the car jumped forward. Max sat in the back seat, holding his AR-15 on the back seat covers so he could begin filling the creature with bullets if it came too close. At first, it gained on us. Even with the accelerator pressed all the way down, the car hit a massive pothole, and Naomi instinctively braked and swerved, allowing the charred arm of the creature to come down and rake the back of the windshield. It exploded inwards, peppering Max with safety glass. Max fired rapidly out the back window. I saw the long arm of the creature explode as it reached towards us. Then its fiery red eyes fell into 100 pieces as the bullets caught it directly in the middle of its head. The rest of its body immediately started decomposing, thousands of small pieces of ash and large charred wood being blown in the wind, until it disappeared like a disintegrating mirage.
"Oh my God," I said breathless. "That was a close one."
Max looked forward at me, still as cool as a cucumber, without a drop of sweat on his forehead.
"Don't you ever get frazzled, Max?"
I asked.
"I've seen a lot of my time as an agent," he said. "It takes a lot to rattle me."
"Well, we didn't get any more fuel," Naomi said. "But I think we learned something integral back there. Apparently, there are people here raising at least some of these creatures. Maybe some sort of cultists."
"But how did they get here? And how did they not get ripped up by the monsters in these forests?" I asked.
Naomi shrugged. "If I had to guess, maybe they had some sort of sigil or marker. And it sounded like they were speaking in some sort of ancient Indian language, maybe Pali or Sanskrit, or perhaps another Proto-Iranian dialect. That could indicate that they are following something ancient, as those were the ancient sources of the chants in Theravada and Mahayana Buddhism. If these monks are some sort of scheme that practice sacrifices or raises demons, then they could be thousands of years old." Naomi shrugged. "Unless we could talk to one of them, I doubt we will ever know for sure."
"I have a feeling we'll end up seeing them again," I said. "Whatever evil they're doing here, it must be part of this road."
We continued driving in silence for a while. My hammering heart started to slow down after a few minutes, and with the adrenaline of my system, I began to feel tired. I felt like I had been here for weeks instead of just the night. Checking my phone, I saw it was already 9 in the morning, and still, the sun had not risen. We pulled over for a break to use the bathroom, or what was passed for it, with only the trees and bushes around. The moon was full, but had a reddish-orange hue covering it, similar to what I had seen in lunar eclipses. The car continued plodding along slowly, going 20 miles an hour past the constant potholes and the swaying trees and bushes on both sides. Occasionally, I would see silver eyes staring out from between the bushes. Sometimes, they looked like they were on silhouettes that were 15 feet tall. I didn't know what was out there in the dark and didn't want to know. So we just kept on driving and talking, none of us wanting to think about what would happen if we inevitably ran out of fuel. The tank was, after all, already 7/8 empty, and I doubted we would find any gas stations on this road. When the car stopped, we would have to continue on foot. But to what? What were the Death Cap Mountains? And could we get back to the regular towns we knew from there?
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses, plus free delivery when you add a base. Ends Monday. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number. To a good life's sleep.
As we drove on, clearings opened up to view. Many miles in the distance, I could see the silhouette of the dark mountains that stood high overhead. There was also what appeared to be a radio or phone tower not far away. My phone had no service, but as we drew near, a weak wireless internet network appeared on my phone under the name Emergency Services 772. After 15 minutes, we saw it next to the road, with a dirt turnaround in front of it. It had stairs that went up to a helix on the edge of the tower. The Wi-Fi was too weak to get a connection down in the car.
"I want to go up to the tower," I said. "Maybe we could get further down the road and hopefully get some internet. I want to write in the account of what we had seen in case we never make it home, seeing as the visitor center could connect to the internet from the real world. I think the wireless connection here might be able to do it also."
Max consented with a grunt, but Naomi seemed unsure.
"Is it really worth it? And even if we do contact people on the other side of the barrier, what if it just encourages someone to come looking for the road? We would be responsible for their death," Naomi said.
"Maybe," I said. "Maybe that's why they leave internet connections throughout the path. It could just be a way to trap new people who think it's just some fake story."
I frowned. "But we have to try. Even if one person could be warned away, we have to try." With that, I got out of the car and approached the metal staircase. I heard Max and Naomi follow me. The stairs seemed to rise 15 stories in the air, a circular pattern that hewed the three thick metal poles that rose into the air. Looking down, I could see all the way to the bottom through the metal veins that had composed the staircase. It did not inspire confidence. Every time I looked down, my stomach would flip, and a shot of adrenaline would reach down to the very tips of my fingers and toes. I never liked heights. There was a thin steel banister that ran on the inner dimension of the stairs, and I gripped it the entire way up until my knuckles were white. I counted the steps to take my mind off the height, but lost count after about 1,700 stairs. This was, by far, the highest tower I had ever been on. Nevertheless, we ended up getting to the top without an issue. I checked my phone and, to my relief, I did have full Wi-Fi access now. But the light on my phone illuminated something far less cheerful across the observation desk. 10 black, twisted fingers held the side of the deck, as if someone was hanging by the tips of their fingers alone 15 stories in the air. My heart leapt in my throat as I realized that whoever was there must have been hanging since at least before I got there.
"Hello?"
I asked, drawing nearer. There was no response, not even a breath or a sign. As I drew closer, I saw the nails were long, twisted, and sickly looking. They looked like they had dried blood and dirt shoved underneath them, debris which had festered for months into a black goo. Something in my gut told me to avoid the fingers. I went 10 feet to the right, as wide a berth as I could give them, and looked over the railing to the thing hanging below. With the glance back, I saw that Max and Naomi had stopped at the first step, sensing danger and refusing to come to the observation deck with me until they understood what was happening. The moonlight illuminated the thing's shiny black skin, which glinted like the carapace of a beetle. Its arms were far too long for a human being, looking more like a chimpanzee in its proportions. Its pure white eyes stared over at me for a moment before it shrieked and began swinging over to me, one hand over the other, and tried to pull me over the side. I fell back with a cry as its fingers swept the air mere centimeters in front of my shirt. If it had grabbed me, I know without a doubt I would be dead. I fell down to the observation deck, looking through the metal grating down 15 stories, and feeling I would vomit from terror at any moment. Thankfully, at that moment, Max ascended the last step and took aim with his rifle. He hit the creature directly in the center of its chest, sending it flying backwards. 4 or 5 seconds later, I heard a heavy thud as it slammed into the hard dirt and rocks below. I tried to get back to my feet, but first, I threw up through the metal vents. My heart was beating so fast that I thought it would explode. I focused on my breathing and slowly calmed myself down. Naomi had brought up some water and protein bars. We sat and ate and drank in silence as I wrote this up and posted it. In the distance, I could see the massive mountains beckoning me on. From up here, they looked so close that I could just jump from here to there with long enough legs. But of course, it was just an optical illusion, as they still had to be at least 20 or 30 miles away.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses, plus free delivery when you add a base. Ends Monday. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number. To a good life's sleep.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save